Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. I mean, do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a Magic Wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the Magic Wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I've been so obsessed with my Magic Wand, I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago, because now there are multiple iterations of the Magic Wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the Magic Wand Rechargeable, tiny with the Magic Wand Mini, or micro. Micro's really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure. Okay, real talk. We all have embarrassing moments in the bedroom, you know, like gas, bloating, indigestion, and more. And I hear from so many of you with stomach issues, and it's keeping you from the pleasure you so rightly deserve. Well, I got some great news. While studies show that gut issues directly impact our arousal, erections, and overall sexual health, I got a game changer for your overall wellness. Introducing Just Thrive Probiotic. It is my secret weapon for overall health and the fuel for my sex life. Just Thrive Probiotic isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is a clinically proven game changer, a gut superhero designed to up-level your passion and sex life. So no more embarrassing moments, only a life of gut-powered ecstasy. That sounds good, right? It's the first probiotic formulated with four ancestral survival strains, clinically guaranteed to reach your gut 100% alive. This probiotic is like your personal gut gardener, maintaining the health of your gut by eliminating bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and replenishing the good, making it a game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, and even your mood. With Just Thrive, you'll nourish your gut microbiome, fueling your mind, body, and soul. So say hello to increased libido, enhanced pleasure, and a whole new level of satisfaction. Oh, don't miss my episode, Why Gut Health is Sexy with Tina Anderson, where you can learn more about this groundbreaking company. For a limited time, you can try Just Thrive 100% risk-free by visiting justthrivehealth.com and enter promo code SEXWITHEMILY at checkout to save 20% off on a 90-day bottle of Just Thrive probiotic. So take charge of your gut health, take charge of your sex life, and live your healthiest life yet with Just Thrive.
The definition of hell is meeting the man that you could have been when you're laying on your deathbed. That's something we say. That's from a book called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill.
And that's Hell's great.
Yeah. That is like the credo that we live by. When we go to our deathbed, that we're going to be there smiling because we're going to know like, hey, I did everything that I could possibly do. I had the relationships that I wanted. I raised my kids the way I wanted. I had this amazing connection with my wife, physically, mentally, emotionally with my wife. I did the work that made me come alive. I lived a good life.
Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm joined by Larry Hagner from the Good Men Project to talk about all things fatherhood, masculinity, and sex. Topics include the five dimensions of fatherhood. What are they and why are they so important? Ways to talk to your kids about sex and pleasure without getting too graphic. The importance of prioritizing your intimate relationship because you're parents, but you're also lovers. And how to be the best role model for your kids. And we're focusing here on fathers to sons. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's gotta have her standards. Oh, my.
The women know about shrinkage.
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this show, checking out our website, sexwithemily.com. You can find me on SiriusXM Radio on Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific. If you want a 30-day trial, you can go to sexwithemily.com/SXM. You can also call in 888-947-8277. You guys, there's also videos on SiriusXM, so check it out. You can get a 30-day trial, see what you've been hearing. And you can also find me on all social media. It's at sexwithemily across the board. All right, guys, I hope you enjoy the show with Larry. Larry Hagner.
Emily.
Hi.
What's going on?
I'm so glad to have you back on the show.
I'm so glad to be here. Your room looks a little different.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a good chat last time.
Yeah, we did.
A few times we've chatted.
We have.
Larry has the Dad Edge podcast and the Good Dad Project, still called all those things. Didn't you change stuff around?
Yeah. Yeah. So Good Dad Project is still like the over, like it's like the umbrella organization. Dad Edge is more the brand.
I just love the idea. Like, we need more people to focus on dads. I don't think a lot of people do. Like, it's such a great niche. There's so much about women. How do we help women? But I love that you've created this thriving community of fathers and men to kind of help each other open up, share vulnerabilities, share like concerns that's going on in the home, probably a lot of similar challenges. So yes. That's amazing.
So do you want to hear a story?
Yes.
Okay. So here's the story. I don't think I shared this last time I was on your show, but so this is how like the whole thing started. So I was born in 1975. My parents were married for 4 years. After I was 9 months old, my dad headed out. And then didn't know him, didn't even know that there was a dad or anything like that. And I'll never forget this. When I was 4 years old, I was in preschool, and I remember men coming to pick their kids up from school. And I knew what a dad was, and I just knew we didn't have one because I was raised exclusively by my mom. So I'll never forget, you'll appreciate this, I'll never forget the first time my mom actually brought a man home from work that she was dating. And this guy, it was 1979. I was 4 years old. I will never forget this as long as I live. This guy walks in. He was white collar. He was like a data software guy. He had a 3-piece suit on, the handlebar mustache. He had a briefcase, a trench coat, the whole nine yards. And in my mind, I was like, oh my God, she did it. She finally found us a dad. Like she's brought a dad home. So my mom introduced me to this guy. And the first question I ask him is, are you going to be my dad? And like literally like silence in the room, like no. And there's kind of awkward laughing, right. That kind of thing. But lo and behold, a year went by. They did get married.
Okay.
They were together for 5 years. He adopted me, and he was a really nice guy when he was sober. He had a drinking problem. And when he did drink, he got really abusive. He was a pretty mean dude. When I was 10, they got divorced, and I've never seen him since. So he was out.
Okay.
And so then I started asking questions like, hey, why was I a part of the wedding? Like, where did I come from? That kind of, and then my mom told me that I had a real father. And I won't go into detail about it, but when I was 12, so 2 years later, I had an opportunity to meet my biological father. And it was a total mistake. It was a total fluke. And we ended up spending like a few months together. I met him, which nothing terrified me more when I was 12 years old than meeting my biological father.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I just got chills about it. Okay.
It was pretty crazy. Well, the story actually gets even crazier.
Okay.
So we hung out for a few months. He was remarried. He had a 2-year-old son, another one on the way. And we just, you know how you're dating someone and then suddenly they kind of pull this fade away. Like it just sort of gets awkward.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happened. Like it just sort of, I just remember like as a 12-year-old, like looking at him, like he just seems like something's like heavy on him. Right. I don't know what it is. And he just kind of, we got further and further away. After a while he was like, hey, you know, it's complicated and I'm trying to start things over again. And he was out again. Mm. And my mom got married a total of 3 times and she dated men in between. And every guy she dated was either some sort of toxic, like alcoholic, abusive. So I always say half my childhood was spent without a father figure. And then the other half was spent with some sort of male role model that was toxic and had addiction issues. Well, here's where the story takes a really interesting turn. So when I was 30, so 14 years ago, I became a father for the first time. I have 4 boys. I have a 13-year-old, 11-year-old, 5-year-old, and 3-year-old. And I met my biological father again. And it was a total fluke. I was in a coffee shop in St. Louis and I was there with a friend. And all of a sudden, he just came walking in the door. And I recognized him. And the friend that was with me knew the story and all that.
Wow.
And she was also a coworker of mine. And we're sitting there and I was like, you're not going to believe this, but my father just walked in the door. And she's like, oh my God, like your biological father. I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, what are you going to say to him? And I'm like, nothing. I'm not going to say a word. Like, what am I going to say to him? I'm 30. Like, you know, he's.
You haven't seen him since you were 12 or 13.
I hadn't seen him since I was 12. So she went up to him.
Oh, yeah. I would too. I'd be like, no, no. Yeah. You're talking to dad. Okay.
That's what she did. So, yeah. So she brings him over and he just kind of like walked over very humbly. I mean, there was nothing more awkward than like sitting in my seat and then making eye contact with my dad who is sitting across in the Starbucks. And he just like got up and he just kind of like humbly like walked over. He extended his hand. He's like, you know, hey, you know, how are you doing? Like, are you two married? He was talking to me and her. And I was like, no, I'm married. I was like, I actually have a son on the way. He's like, you know, we should get together sometime. And I'm like, huh. And I wasn't nice, but I wasn't mean. And I was like, you know what? If you want to get together, that's fine. You know, here's my contact info. You can call me if you want. Well, then I leave. And within about an hour and a half, he got back to his office and I got this email.
Wow.
And just basically like, I've always regretted like not being a part of your life. And I'd like to somehow, some way, shape or form, be a part of it. Still married to the same woman. I have two younger half brothers. And here we are 14 years later. And we do have a relationship and I've got a good relationship with my two half brothers, my stepmother. And my boys know him as grandpa. I mean, so everything is good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say we're father and son, but we're friends, you know, we're good friends. But here's where I'll tell you the answer to your question. That was a long way to get there. But you know, when I became a father for the first time, I spent the first 6 years being a dad. My son was six, my other son was four. And I was so frustrated.
Okay.
I had no patience. I was your typical guy and my marriage was in jeopardy. No patience with my kids. I was throwing everything in my career because that's where I was good. But I was a wreck everywhere else. And I finally just got tired of feeling completely helpless and clueless. And one thing happened, and it's still hard for me to talk about to this day. But my 11-year-old, when he was four, I kind of had like this really dark moment where we were moving and I was packing up the playroom and course, me being just a jackass with no patience, my four-year-old son comes walking in. I just packed up his playroom. It took me hours and I was in a bad mood, had a bad day, just like every other day. And I told him, I was like, do not get any of these toys out. I was like, I'm going to go take a break. Do not get any of these toys out. It took me forever to pack them up. Come back down half hour later, everything's pulled out. And I spanked him so hard that he hit the ground. And then when I went to go help him up, he like shuddered and I was like, and I literally, I mean, it messes with me talking about it out loud because like my wife, who is extremely low drama, never gets upset. Right. I mean, she's like a saint helping raising four boys. She looked at me and she's like, seriously? Like he just wanted to get to his toys. Like, and yeah, for my wife,
he's four. Like what else is there?
Right.
Right. But you had reached your limit
at
that moment and you acted out.
I did. I acted out. And for my wife to say that, even though it wasn't like, that was big for her and it was big for me to hear because she never does stuff like that. So I went in my office and I was on social media and I was upset and I got on Facebook. I just wanted to distract myself. And I finally just looked in the corner, it said create a page. And I created a page called The Good Dad Project. And it literally just like flowed off my mind and my heart. And I was like, at that point, I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm done trying to figure this out.
On your own.
On my own. I'm just going to be a student of this. And I'm just going to try to figure this out. I'm just going to research it just like I do anything else. And research it meaning like I'm going to just be curious of how to do this better. And I'm going to ask questions and I'm going to put my ego aside. And not every answer to every question is going to be fine and good and good and fine. I'm going to share like what's going on. And then 2013 turned to the blog, 2015, the podcast. I launched my first book in 2015. Right. Here we are 4.5 years later.
Amazing. Congratulations for that. Well, that's so brave. So you got onto Facebook and what did you type there? Like help, like is anyone else, any dads out there? Like you invited your network of friends on Facebook and then what did you find were the common themes then when you first started? Do you remember kind of the first kind of where you all came together and you're like, God, we all really need this. What was the first issue you tackled?
First issue I tackled was everybody being quiet about it. I mean, like literally, like you go out and it's like, what do dads struggle with? And there wasn't a whole lot that I found at the time because men are usually so quiet about it. Everything you ask us is either fine or good or fine, right? But we've really boiled it down to what we call five dimensions.
Let's
now.
Let's talk about that. Yeah. That's your main principles are the five dimensions, right? And you're doing a course about this that men can take, but the five dimensions of fatherhood.
Yeah. So it's mastering your finances is one, optimizing your health, which physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health, having what we call a legendary marriage and enjoying parenting, having an epic connection with your kids and business. Those are the five. And what I can tell you is in those five areas, that's where men, we get the least amount of training and we certainly don't want to ask for help. Cause there's like that lot of shame, a lot of guilt, right. Like, hey, I'm not on top of my shit. If it looks like I don't have a handle on these things. So that's really what men struggle with is men. I think overall men lead these quiet lives of desperation, you know, right. And we throw ourselves on the sword for everybody else with good intentions, but then we end up showing up with very little patience, a short temper, you know, not having the marriage that we want, not being the man that we want to be for our women, not being the father that leads our kids. So we struggle with these and we tend to internalize all this stuff and we beat ourselves up. And right. Men tend to talk about like the same five surface boring things.
So what know? Are those five things? Like sports?
Sports.
Work. Yeah. So boring. Work.
Yeah. God, kids, sports. Time. Yeah. And like-
and very surface.
Very surface.
So here's my question. So I want to hear more about these five dimensions and the five pillars. But what I see in men, and you're a man in your 40s, is that I see this in men in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s. I believe that for many men, and again, I'm not- some men have done this work, but many men do just, they don't, it's work. Like you have to get into like vulnerability and shame and childhood issues and kind of work it through to learn how to be there for first yourself, then your children and your wife. So what did that look like for you since 2013? Like, did you get into therapy? Did you tell me what was your process before creating it for other men? You know, research is research. My show started in the very same way. I was like, I'm not having the best sex in my life. No one else seems there. How do you have great sex? And I started asking questions. So, you know, tell me what this journey looked like for you the last.
Yeah, it was literally years, that exact. Years. Yeah, that exact same thing where I'm just like, man, I can't be the only one dealing with this, right. You know? So I started the blog, you know, in 2013, that was just my way of like literally just kind of owning my own shit, like just owning it all and just being like, here's how I'm messing up. Here's how I'm making, but here's some things I've learned. And then suddenly I started being asked to speak and I'm like, speak. I was like, what do you want me to speak on? Like, I'm not an expert. And they're like, well, no, that's the thing. Like, you're not an expert. And that's why it's kind of like more of a mission of in the trenches. And you know, that's really where it started in 2013. And then I didn't even enjoy writing, even though I got a couple of books out there. So the podcast was really like this thing that I really look forward to and I've been doing ever since. And I always say, it keeps me curious and it keeps me learning because I get to have conversations with people who are much smarter than me, that, you know, about topics like this, like sex and intimacy.
Okay, let's like, talk about what have you learned about that? How has your sex life changed? Yeah. I mean, you have four kids. You've been with your wife for how many years?
Well, I've known her for 23 years. We've been married for 16.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what have you learned about sex and intimacy? How's that going?
It's actually, we have the best sex and the most frequent than we've ever had.
In the last few years?
In the last few years. So, I would say the last 5 years. And so much so that we keep having these kids. So we need to like sleep in separate bedrooms at this point. But what I can tell you is all these things that I was doing just really wrong.
Where was it before? And yeah.
And a lot of it started outside the bedroom. You know, these conversations that I'd have with my wife were just terrible. Like, I know you recently came on my show again and we talked about like how you always come to conversations in the defense, mm-hmm. you know, and I was so guilty of that. Plus I was very selfish. I didn't love her in her love language. I didn't do things selflessly. I kind of had my own agenda, you know, and I
your focused, own sex agenda or what you're need, getting your needs met.
Yeah. Getting my needs met. Like, mm-hmm. and I, even when I would do things like, you know, years ago, like I would do things to be like, well, if I do X, then she'll probably want to have sex, you know? Right. And then if she didn't, then I'd be pissed.
Right.
You know, cause that expectation was let down.
Right. Yeah. This unspoken agreement. How did she not know that? And she was like, you know, you're thinking in your head, scheming to get sex without actually talking about it.
Right. And I think a lot of guys, you know, like it or not, that's the way some of us operate. Yeah, absolutely. And I was no different. Yeah.
So you, through having conversations with her, so it wasn't always incredible sex. You had to work on it and talk about it and realize what her love languages were. I know you got our subscription box. Didn't you say you were subscribed to it?
Yeah.
So
Emily's box.
It's true, you guys. We have a new one out this month. Date night. It's awesome because we all need date night. So tell me where it is now. So tell me about your sex life. You say it's great, great and hot and better than before. How did you get there? Was it through conversations? Was it prioritizing? Was it, I don't know. You tell me.
So a couple what different happens? Things. So the couple of things that we now talk about it. Number one, we talk about it really openly. And instead of like, hey, why don't you do X more, right? Because I think we're all guilty of starting a conversation like that. I like to come to a conversation of like, hey, do you remember that time when you did whatever or we did whatever? How can we have more of that?
Okay. You know, how can we bring up the past things?
Yeah, like, yeah. How can we do more of that? Or if we were, so like, for instance, we were out last weekend and we were at lunch together on a Sunday. We were watching a baseball game together and we're not even baseball fans. Like we were out away from the kids.
You're like, I will do anything that we were out away from the kids, right. Even watch baseball.
Right. Sunday afternoon. And we were just talking, having a good time. We were really connecting. And then she's just like, let's do something crazy. And I'm like, okay, what's on your mind? And she's like, I don't know. She's like, but just something that's out of the ordinary, something we wouldn't do, something kind of naughty. And I'm like, let's go get a hotel room for like just a couple hours. And she's like, well, it's not like we can stay there. I was like, well, who cares? They don't care. We're paying for the night anyway. They don't care if we're there for an hour and we leave or what. Yeah. So we did. And it was so cool because we pulled up to this hotel. You feel like you're doing something totally wrong. Right. It's almost like you feel like you're having an affair.
Yeah.
Like you feel like a teenager again. Like you're like, we shouldn't be doing this. It's the middle of the day. You know, the kids are at home with a babysitter. And we're like, yeah, but that's why it's so awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Something so outside the box. And the other cool thing, too, is that the one thing that I've definitely learned about my wife is we have really amazing sex when she's relaxed and when she's more stress free.
Just your wife, though. Right. It's a lot of women. Yeah. When we are stressed and anxious and we're not relaxed, we are not going to be in our bodies and feel safe and let go.
Right.
Okay. So she's relaxed in the hotel
room. We just took our time. I mean, it was really hot. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And there was like no laundry for her to look at or no kids like that might come running in the room. We just got to be ourselves. And that was so cool. And then we left and we were like, hell yes.
Yeah, you did it. Right? That's a great story. I love that. So in looking, so it sounds like you guys have worked on your intimacy and then looking at your five dimensions of fatherhood, sex isn't in there. So where does it fall in between finances, health, marriage, connection with kids and leadership? Health?
Marriage. Well, health, health, self-care, right?
So, self-care.
But yeah, having a legendary marriage, we truly view that there are four pillars to that. One is self-care. One is partnership, and partnership is like more the business side of marriage. Like it's the not so sexy things to talk about, like the finances, the schedules, all that, and just making sure we're on the same page with that. And then there's friendship. Like, hey, do we actually enjoy each other? Like, are we actually friends? And then the fourth pillar is sex and intimacy.
Okay, got it. So it's in your pillars. People have to break it down.
They do, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break and we come back even more Larry Hagner. You are teaching a lot of men right now. Like they're in they could join wherever they live in the world, like a mastermind.
Yeah, we have a mastermind. We literally have guys from all over. We have guys from New Zealand all the way over to Italy and everything in between. Like we have guys who are worldwide who are part of it.
Do you find that men worldwide are struggling? I mean, clearly you created these five pillars or these five dimensions that they're kind of struggling with these same exact issues. Is there anything that's been surprising to you? Like, are there any that cultures or places where you're like, oh, some of these men don't deal with this? Or is this pretty universal?
It seems like, I mean, I haven't dove into like, so we have guys who are like in Ireland, Scotland, the UK, Italy, Spain, South Africa, obviously Canada and the US and everywhere. We have a couple guys in Japan. But what I've noticed is culturally, like we're pretty united in all of those. But one thing I have noticed is it's kind of like what we talked about on our show is that most men seem to have an okay marriage. And it's usually within those four elements that something is wrong or broke. They're usually doing pretty well in one or two, but then there's one or two that might be kind of broken. But what I've found is that most guys have a okay marriage, but what they want is that truly thriving marriage. And they just have a hard time figuring out, well, how do I navigate that? And how do I do that?
But so in talking about emotions, so I asked you this question, like, have you gone to therapy?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So you've been in therapy.
Yeah.
Cause for a lot of men, I feel like, and this is something that what I have found, cause I hear from women a lot, is like a lot of people I find are responsible for not only their mental health and the mental health of the children, but they're like, I've got my husband's 42 and I'm still taking care of his emotional baggage. He hasn't done his work yet. And so I think it's great that you are leading a path and you're demonstrating to men how they can actually grow and learn and change. But do you ever find that there's men who just don't want to do the work? They're like, no, I won't. So how do you break through to them? Guys who are going, I don't need therapy or everything's fine. They want to just talk about sports and they just want to stay in their comfy place. Like, because not every man, and I see this again in friends who've been married for a long time and listeners, but why I always bring up friends is because I actually have the history of friendships that have gone on for 30, 40 years. My best friends, and I've seen them in marriages where I know, and I talk to them like almost every day. I see how it's ebbed and flowed, and many are unhappy, but many are happy. And the ones are the happiest, the ones where their partner, husband, he went to therapy. He did the work because her nagging or trying to make him grow, they just, or, and then with the other friends, they just accept. They're like, well, he's never going to be able to be emotionally available. He's great with the kids because he drives them to school or he builds things with them, but he's not going to be that emotional support because it's just not a natural place for men to go. Some do, some don't. So can you kind of just talk about that journey of becoming a vulnerable, emotive, open, emotional man?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, 40 years, I thought you were like 30. So.
Well, we met in kindergarten.
Right. So as far as that goes, that's a topic that fires me up, to be honest with you, because I was that guy.
Well, right. You're that guy, but you're not that guy anymore.
I was that guy. I'm not that guy anymore. But here's what I can tell you. Doing this work, I always say this, doing this work, 98% of it, I love. I absolutely love it. The 2% that I absolutely hate is the guy that complains and bitches and does nothing.
Right.
Does nothing. Or he quits on himself. Men are experts at self-sabotage, unfortunately. But what I can tell you is the one thing that men struggle with the most is asking for help, because they view it as, well, if I go to a counselor, that means I'm a problem. That means I'm weak. That means I'm this. They label themselves, but yet we'll go to a coach to help us to be a better sales manager or a better leader in the business place. Well, guess what? That coach is the same thing as a counselor. They're just doing it in a professional setting. Exactly. I mean, they should rename counseling to coaching because that's really what it is.
You're right. Yeah. Like, babe, I got a good coach for you.
Right.
Yeah, for your mental, you're absolutely right. It's something about therapy. People still, there's still a stigma that they're crazy or they're wrong. And I think also if men have spent a lifetime kind of repressing feelings, emotions, insecurities, they're like, I'm not going to go out and bring it up to someone I don't know. So you get these men, so you kind of bring them out of their shell, they're hiding, you help them tackle all of these, which feels more, I mean, because we do talk a lot about women, but I think that this is, you figured out how to get men interested in this process because it's not just one thing they need. You're working in all the areas.
So can I share a quote with you that we talk about all the time?
Yes.
So the definition of hell is meeting the man that you could have been when you're laying on your deathbed. That's something we say. That's from a book called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill.
Napoleon Hill's great.
Yeah. And that's something that is like the credo that we live by, that when we go to our deathbed, that we're going to be there smiling because we're going to know like, hey, I did everything that I could possibly do. I had the relationships that I wanted. I raised my kids the way I wanted. I had this amazing connection with my wife, physically, mentally, emotionally with my wife. I did the work that made me come alive. I lived a good life. And what most men are really doing is they're in what we call the grind, the drift. You know, every day is that wash, rinse, repeat. I go to work. I have my coffee. I live sort of the so-so life. And then suddenly they, you know, when they look back on it when they're 60 and 70, I'm like, I didn't live this life the way I intended it to. And the way I view it is like, draw a line in the sand and ask the questions that you need to ask to live that life that you want, so you're not meeting that man that you could have been when you're on your deathbed.
Yeah. I think we all kind of have that fear of being in our deathbed, of having the regrets, but that's just a very specific way of thinking. Yeah, I don't want to be the guy I met now. Cause like men are silently suffering. They are more so than women. Like we're more open. We're like, how have you been? I haven't seen you in years. Well, here's everything that's wrong with me.
Right.
I haven't seen you in 4 years and in 6 minutes, you're gonna tell me everything that's wrong. That's how women are. Cause we kind of connect through that space, but men often don't. So one of your dimensions is finances. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that for a minute? I feel like kids, finances, and sex are the things that people fight about the most in relationships. So let's talk about some of the, how have you broke through if you've ever had financial things? How do you approach that in your relationship?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. So in our community, we have a couple guys who are financial coaches. They lead mastermind call teams and all that. And I've learned a ton from those guys and from other experts who have been on the show. So everyone has an emotional connection to money in some way, shape, or form. Right. It can be good and it can also be baggage. But here's the rub though, too, is that we are not taught personal finance growing up. The last time I looked, it's not in college, not in high school. It's more like, if you look at those five dimensions and finance being one of them, it's almost like, oh, you're married and you now have combined finances. Best of luck. Hope it works out. Just like being married.
We get no instruction for anything. Right. It's amazing. We're all alive.
I know. Same thing with the kids. Like, oh yeah, you have your PhD in human mm-hmm. sexuality, right? So you have all kinds of hours and training in that particular field. Yet when we're married, people are like, oh yeah, just go figure it out. Right.
So super easy to get married, have kids.
Right.
Divorce is harder than marriage.
Right.
Okay. So
finances. So you're looking at two different people usually, and each one of them have a bit of emotional baggage when it comes to finances, right? Neither one usually knows what to do. And usually what happens too is we have this abundance mentality around money, or we have a scarcity. And most Americans, it's scarcity.
Right.
The latest statistics that I read, I think only one third of Americans actually do a monthly budget. And I think this one's really scary. People who are 50 and above have an average of $30,000 in their retirement fund, which is absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So things like that, people just don't know how to save. So the way my wife and I really assessed it was when we first got married, and I think this is pretty typical. Like I have a stomach for investing. Mm-hmm. Like I don't mind it. Like if I throw money into the market or into a real estate and I lose a little bit, I'm kind of okay with it. Like, cause I know it ebbs and flows. Now when it comes to cash flow, it freaks me out. And I think it's because I grew up we had nothing. So I saw what it was like to be poor and not have money. And it doesn't matter how much money we have in the bank. When I see money go out to pay a bill, I hate it.
Right.
Now, my wife, on the other hand, has a stomach for that. So she does the bills and the cash flow and all that. I don't go to our checking account. I haven't been to our checking account in probably 5 years.
Right.
I don't even know what's being put into the checking account. All I know is I manage the business and I don't even manage the financial portion of my business. Like I have somebody else do that.
Right.
But when it comes to cash flow, that's somebody else's wheelhouse. That's not mine. But my strength is like, hey, let me go. I'm risky enough to do investments in different things. So I think you need to know where your strengths are.
So that's like everything. You figure it out where your wife can kind of help out, where you guys can do it together.
Right.
The strengths, the weaknesses. You don't have to all do everything or live in the dark about it.
Right.
Because a lot of people just choose kind of like sex. Like, oh, we're just not going to deal with money.
Right.
It's going to be okay. And a lot of women I hear from, they're like, oh, my husband's got it. He's taking care of that. I mean, that's, again, kind of an older paradigm. But I still see that come into play with women who's, even if their partners die or they get divorced, like, I have no idea how much money they have. So to kind of, it's important for couples to come together on both of it. Is that what you talk about too in your men's groups, that they should bring their partners into it?
Oh my God. Yeah, you have to. The other thing too is that, and this one's critical and foundational. We take men and their wives through an exercise that allows them to really understand what it is that they value. So like, for instance, my wife and I went through this exercise, and I won't go into the details of it, but at the end of the exercise, we really understood like, wow, we really don't value stuff at all.
Right.
So like Christmases, we were always like, why don't we really get into Christmas or the holidays? Like everyone's so excited. Like, why are we overwhelmed and stressed out and pissed off? And it's because we don't value stuff. Like the cars that we drive, like the home that we have, it's a nice home, but the cars that we drive, we could care less because the kids are trashing it. So we went through this exercise of like, okay, what do we really value? Like we value our environment, our home. So that's like big to us. We're willing to spend money there, but we value experiences over stuff. Yep. And I think a lot of people get caught up in like this material thing. It's like, oh, my neighbor has a new, right, you know, Land Rover. Keeping so up with the Joneses kind I should of thing. Get that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not even part of who you are, your core values. So it's like understanding like, hey, I don't need a Range Rover. I can just have a crappy minivan, but right, I want to take my kids to go to Colorado and summit a 14er, yeah, and camp up there, like that kind of thing. Just these experiences that you share versus the stuff.
That's so really smart, I think, for couples to kind of get clear on that, to kind of, because then you'll just keep battling it out. It's kind of like one of those unspoken things that if until you mention it, like couples be like, think listening to this going, oh yeah, she always gets mad when I go out and buy these new shoes. Why is that? She values experiences, I value things, and I've heard this before, but what a great, I love the tests or quizzes or whatever it was that you took.
Yeah.
Is it evaluation through your group?
Yeah.
Smart.
Just understand what we value.
What do you value? Yeah. And I guess if she did value things, you'd have to kind of work, like have a work.
Yeah, we'd have
that.
To work around that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that would save so much time too. So with your four boys, has anything come up about sex and pleasure and how do you talk to them? How do you educate them?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure they're that age, 13, 11.
They are. Yeah. So my 13-year-old, and so I got a couple of stories about that. So my 13-year-old, he's like an open book. Like he's way braver than I was growing up. But then again, like maybe it's because we have a comfort level. Like he feels really comfortable talking about and asking anything.
Okay.
So like, I'll never forget it. 2 years ago, he was 11 going on 12 and I drove him to a hockey tournament. We had 2 hours and he'd kind of been fishing around like kind of asking about sex, but I knew for 2 hours I was probably going to get grilled. Like I was just expecting it. And sure enough, I did. Here's my view of talking to kids about sex. I view it as it's an open book. Like you can ask me anything that you want. I'll tell you I'll tell you experiences. I'll tell you everything you need to know. I think the more taboo we make it for kids, like it's this hush hush thing, this shame, it's guilt, it's this, I think you're doing more harm than good.
Yeah.
So for instance, there was one night, it was about a year ago, that our boys came down to our room, and anytime we have sex, we lock the door. Mm-hmm. And they tried to get in and we were like, hey, we're tired, whatever, like just come back later. So my wife and I were like, God bless. And I think this is like the third or fourth time it had happened. The next day, I don't know if most parents would agree with this or not, but who cares? It's the way we handled it. We sat them down. And we're like, hey, listen, you're old enough now. At the time, I think they were 12 and 10. Mm-hmm. And we were like, hey, look, we're just going to be really honest with you. Okay. Because we know you guys like to come upstairs and all that other good stuff and try to open the door. If the door is locked, that's time that mom and I are having together. And they're like, and we knew they were going to ask like, what time? We're like, we're probably having sex. And they were like, oh, what? Really? Like,
in the house? Gross.
Yeah. Right? Like, you guys do that? And we're like, yeah, we do that. And in fact, it's important for you to know that if you're in a marriage, you should be having sex and you should be having a lot of sex. And that's okay. And that's healthy. It's right. Like, it's not this taboo thing. So we share that with you because if you do come to the door and you try to open it, what we ask is kindly, give us our space.
That's really healthy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
but then were they like, well, what do you mean sex? Did they ask about that?
No, they knew through friends in school and that kind of thing. But like, so like they've asked me about porn. They've asked me about masturbation. They've asked me, and I've gone, and I can go into any detail you want of how I've explained that.
Well, I think it's important to tell kids that, to let them know and to demonstrate in front of them that it's really important for mom and dad to have time together.
Right.
That's an important part of a relationship, because I think parents are just like so freaked out about like kids finding even their toys. Like, oh, but kids can't find it. It's like, but why not? We make sex so taboo, so scary. I think, I've just been thinking about this. Like, explain to them that's mommy's toy or daddy's toy. We use this for pleasure. Our pleasure is important. Or however you want to use it, our time together is important, right, depending on their age. So I think that is healthy to let them see that when you're in a relationship, these things are, it's rather than pretending it doesn't exist.
Our goal is to gross them out at least once a day.
As to what?
Gross them out at least once a day.
Right. Well, what about masturbation? How do you talk to them about that?
Oh my gosh. Boys? So,
and porn.
Yeah.
Hopefully you tell them it's not real life.
No. Yeah. So I'll share with you how I've talked about masturbation. So like my 13-year-old in particular, like he'll flat out be like, Dad, like, did you used to masturbate growing up? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, how often? I was like all the time. Like, One time I did it six times in a, like when I was like 12 or 13 and he's like, what? You know, so I try to make light of it, you know, you know, so it, he doesn't take it so seriously. And, you know, so he'll ask me, he's like, well, you know, how did you do it? And I'm like, I just tell him, I'm like, well, here's how I did it. Like, why, how are you doing it? And I won't go into that, but like, he'll tell me, I'm like, oh, okay. And so like, he'll bounce these things off of me, but like, it's one of those things where I very open with him about all that stuff because I want him to know like, hey man, this is an everyday conversation.
It has to be every day.
Yeah. It's like, this is, hey, it's sunny outside. Oh, you can ask me anything you want about masturbation. Like that's how I view it. And we cut up about it because I feel like in a way you have to make it lighthearted.
Yeah.
Otherwise he'll feel awkward about
it. Exactly. And then that carries into his relationships when he's older, it's awkward. It's wrong, you know? And then, that's what we see, you know, on the show every day. People still feel weird or they feel shame every time they masturbate. For many men, they just feel awful after. There's like this dread because they were told that it was, you know, taboo and wrong.
Right.
Sounds like you're doing a good job there, Larry.
But porn, you want me to talk about that too?
Sure.
Okay. So the porn talk was something I was just like, oh my God, like how am I going to even broach this topic? So porn, I had this like whole thing planned out and the sex talk took like the full 2 hours on the way and it's still going on. The porn,
it's not a one-time conversation.
No, it's not. But the porn thing, I thought like, oh my God, we're like really going to get in the weeds on this and like he's going to have a ton of questions. Like, what am I going to say? And I did read this one book on it called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. And it was just not that you get what I'm saying. Like not all bad pictures are bad pictures, but like it's a way to come down on your kids' level and be able to talk to them about porn on their level, not necessarily like, oh, hey, have you gone to Pornhub? Right. You know what I mean? So he just got a phone. So I told him, I'm like, look, we've had the sex talk, we've had the masturbation talk. We need to have this talk. I was like, so he's a huge Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. Take this for what it's worth. He's a huge Star Wars fan. I was like, okay, sex has, you know, in some people's minds, some sex is good. And then there's a dark side to it too. And, you know, porn is not necessarily the good side of sex. He's like, well, what do you mean? I was like, here's the deal with porn. I was like, now that you have a phone, I was like, you're either going to see it or your friends are going to show it to you. But there are certain things that you're able to see on iPads or computers or phones or whatever, like other people having sex. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like he was like completely blown away. I was like, there's a big industry out there called the porn industry. I was like, where you can view other people having sex. And he's like, why would people do that? And I'm like, well, people make a lot of money doing that. I was like, so the people who make the movies make a lot of money. The actors in the movies make a lot of money. I was like, look, here's the thing. I'll answer any question that you want about it. I was like, I just want to give you a heads up that sooner or later, one of your friends is going to bring this up on their phone. You might stumble across it on your phone. And here's what I want. You'll never be in trouble if you see it. I don't want you to shame yourself. I don't want you to feel guilty. I don't want you to feel like dad's going to be so mad at me. Just come and talk to me about it. Like, you're never going to be in trouble. You're never going to be punished. Right. So come and talk to me about it so we can have more of this open conversation. And I thought he was going to hit me with a ton of questions. And he was like, okay. He's like, cool. He's like, thanks for telling me that. And that was it. And
he hasn't come up to you with the questions?
He hasn't. So I don't...
Okay. Okay, the thing is, and then when he does, you're like, yeah, well, it's not actually how you should actually have sex.
Right.
You're doing great, Larry.
Well, thanks.
I'm so happy for you.
Try to learn from experts like you, Emily.
I'm so glad. I'm learning from you. Our listeners are learning from you. How can they learn more? Tell me, Larry, what can they do in your orbit? Because I think you're providing really great services for men. How can they join you?
Everything we do, you can find at gooddadproject.com. Podcast is gooddadproject.com/podcast. If you want to jump into what our mastermind is all about, that's our live upfront virtual mastermind. That's called the Dad Edge Alliance Mastermind Community. You can just go to gooddadproject.com/alliance for that.
Okay. I have quickie questions that I ask all my guests. Are you
Let's
ready?
Do it. I like the quickies.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. What's your biggest turn on? It's quick.
Yeah, it is quick. So I'll have a quick answer. My wife and I, since we have four boys, we've got this big master bedroom closet and we call it closet cleaning. Uh-huh. But my wife loves quickies and so do I. So we'll like be like, oh, hey, we need to go clean the closet real quick. And we'll literally go in there for like 4 minutes. And I don't, thank God I'm married to this woman. She can literally get off that quickly, which That's is amazing. Awesome.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, cleaning the closet, like, totally turns me on.
I
yeah.
love it.
Closet
Biggest
cleaning.
Turn off.
High maintenance women.
Okay. What makes good sex?
What makes good sex? Enthusiasm.
Something you would tell your younger self about sex and relationships.
Oh, man. Gosh, I've made so many mistakes that I have to go through. But something I would tell myself is learn how to love and communicate with the other person versus thinking only about yourself inwardly.
Number one sex tip.
Foreplay starts first thing in the morning and never ends.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Larry. Good job. Thank you for coming here to join me. Best
Thanks
of luck
for
with everything.
Me.
I love having you here. I think this is a great service for men everywhere.
You as well.
All right, guys, thanks for listening to the show and supporting the show. Let me know what you thought of the interview with Larry. What topics would you like to hear on the show? I love hearing from you as always, and thanks for supporting the show, reviewing the show, subscribing, and thanks to my amazing team, Ken, Kristen, Michelle, Elisa, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.